to allow the council to begin work on amendments to the comprehensive plan, and that is to the zoning code and map changes attendant to the plan. We have a lot of testimony behind us, and BPS staff is going to give us an overview of where we are in the process, and then we're going to start walking our way through potential amendments after that. Commissioner Novick apparently is going to join us by phone later in the session. We're going to pause the discussion at 10:45, returning at about noon, so we can participate in the event over at the post office site. So,
yeah, I say one thing. I was in New York last week and missed all the drama. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to vote on some of the amendments. I did meet with Joe Zender and his team yesterday to kind of get my boot camp. I'm probably just a step behind my colleagues in terms of the cheat sheet and the sequencing, so
okay.
I apologize in advance for any clumsiness, but I think I know where we're headed.
Okay, and yeah, there are a number of areas I think where we're going to want to have pretty open discussion and get some further perspective from staff, because I've got some questions as well. Okay, with that, Eric.
Thank you, Mayor Hales. Just a few logistics before we dive in.
Pardon me, could I read the title, please?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Sue.
Item 1293, amend the official city zoning map, planning and zoning code, and transportation system plan to carry out Portland's 2035 comprehensive plan, establish a new community involvement program and committee, amend related codes, the 2035 comprehensive plan and plan map to coordinate policies and programs.
Okay.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
So as you know, over the past few weeks, each of your offices have sent potential amendment ideas to BPS staff, and we compiled them into a memo released on November 4th. In addition to that memo, we also published several other staff memos identifying minor errors in the earlier recommendation and some technical changes we believe that are minor and technical in nature that you should adopt. Those memos are were dated the 30th of September, and then 10-13, 11-4, and 11-14. We have also drafted an agenda for today. In that agenda, as we go through each item, it refers to the different amendment numbers in those memos, and you should have each of those memos in the pile of paper in front of you, and I apologize for the thickness of that stack, but we'll try and, if anyone needs to be oriented as we go through, please just say so, and we'll try and help you find the right memo. We also distributed a bundle of testimony that arrived. The record was open until Friday for written comments, and we did receive some. And you have those in front of you now, and they've been entered into the record. I understand there's a few more stragglers that are still in the hands of the clerk that will be distributed today, probably. Today's agenda, we're going to start this morning with several consent lists, taking care of the staff-identified errata and some of the technical changes. We'll move into considering public trails, then on to code amendments, zoning map amendments, and then finally, after the break that the mayor indicated, we would focus on the transportation items then, and we expect Commissioner Novick to be joining us by phone for some of those items. If we run out of time today, we have also reserved a time certain tomorrow at 3:15 if you need it. We'd love to be done today, but I know that we need to discuss some of these items, so that's there if we need it. Any questions about the papers or the order of business?
Mayor, I have just a procedural question. Since it's the four of us and not the five of us for the first session, if we don't have three votes for a particular approach, is it your inclination to just move that forward to either the next session or to the residual session tomorrow so we can see whether there's a consensus?
Yeah, or at least that there are three. Yeah, because I think there are going to be some of these items where we're going to have three votes and no more for a particular approach. So,
and the default is we go back to what planning has recommended. But if the four of us can't resolve the issue, I would hope our procedure is just to kick it to either later or tomorrow to see if there's a third vote.
I think that's the right thing to do. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and we've tried to cluster some of the harder issues later in the agenda where Commissioner Novick can join us. I believe he is not present tomorrow, so you also have to keep that in mind in terms of kicking things forward.
Okay.
So if there are no other questions, we'll start with the errata memos and sort of ease into it with those. And I think the way we could work this, if you'd like, is I can be the MC and identify the amendment, and then you all can then make motions as you see fit.
So So this is the errata section. So, Mayor, I'll move the motion for number one.
All right.
Second.
Further discussion on motion number one, which is just the errata in the document. Okay, let's take a roll call vote on that amendment, please.
Aye.
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 Aye. Okay. And then let's move on to number two.
The number two are a number of technical amendments identified by staff. They're not errors, but they're small and fairly non-controversial. We did recommend, there are 9 minor changes to the code and 10 mapping changes. We did recommend that you pull item 2E from this package based on testimony on Thursday. This was concerning Southeast Reynolds Street, and you heard some testimony about that not us not removing the commercial zoning. The property owners prefer to keep that, and so we recommend you pull that item.
So the effect, that's one of the questions I the effect of pulling item 2E is to retain...
They would retain mixed-use commercial zoning, which is what they had asked for.
Okay. Right. I move the motion.
Second.
Further discussion of that item?
Do we need to separately remove item 2E?
It has been removed.
Oh, it has been removed.
So in this version, it has been removed, okay. Right?
Yeah, you just need to state that you've removed that, I guess.
Okay, so that's the record.
I move the motion that includes removing item 2E.
All right. So let's take a vote on that, please.
Ritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Sussman?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay. Number three.
Okay, and now we're moving into some more... general bundles of things that we did not get the sense from any of you that you were concerned about, so we bundled these into group votes. We did already pull from this item number 3, we pulled amendment number 18, which relates to parcels on Southeast 102nd, because there was testimony from that property owner saying that they prefer amendment number 30, and if that passes, they don't need this amendment. And the situation was that the site is a residential property owned privately within the Adventist Hospital campus, and they preferred, their original testimony was they would like to keep residential zoning, so Amendment 18 did that. However, when we introduced the amendment to allow residential development in the campus zone, they wrote in again saying they would be okay with that and would prefer it over 18.
Okay.
I haven't seen that testimony. I was wondering... why, in principle, should we have campus zoning on a property that they don't have ownership of?
In general, that has been our approach, unless the property owner specifically had other views or had. In this case, I think the property owner does not have an issue with the campus zoning, but wants to be able to maintain residential.
Would it mean that they can only sell to the campus, to that institution?
I don't think so, because the campus zoning would allow other uses, but it certainly would restrict more than it restricts the property differently than a residential zone would be restricted. So if you keep residential, they would not be able to do medical offices, for example. If you keep the campus zoning, they could do private medical offices without necessarily being associated with the campus, and not necessarily have to sell to the campus. Or they could do housing if you're inclined to allow housing in that zone. So it kind of hinges on two things, the philosophy of when you apply the campus zone, and then in this case, whether you intend to vote for number 30 or not.
But it's no longer number 30. It's something else now.
Number 10.
Well, I guess we should state that the amendments still have their numbers from the memos, but the motion item numbers we should...
Motion number.
Yeah, so...
It's code amendment 30, motion number 10. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
Sorry for that confusion.
Yeah, okay. No.
I move the motion.
Yes. What motion, then?
Then number 3 as...
As drafted.
As drafted. Right?
So I have some comments on 16 and 21 as well. So I'd like to pull those 16. For discussion. 16.
Oh, in that list.
Yes.
Okay.
So we'll do the ones that are non-controversial. You're pulling what?
16 and 22, please.
All right. So
my motion is number 3, excluding 16 and 22.
Second.
All right. Further discussion of that option, that revised motion. Okay. Let's take a vote on that, please.
Ritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Sussman?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, so you want to go ahead and pull out 16 and 22 now and talk about those, Amanda?
So 16 is the south side of Powell, west of 17th Avenue, and the request is to change it from CE to CM2. Staff says that the north side is zoned EX, so CM2 serves as a step down.
And you support that?
I support the staff's recommendation.
Okay. So, but why did you pull it? Because wouldn't that have been accomplished if it had remained in the package?
As everybody else, I'm quite challenged by the process here.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm looking to staff.
No, I would. I hope we err on the side of ventilating.
All right, yeah.
You don't want to miss
anything.
Wrong
with, not a problem. Wrong with that. All right, so you're comfortable with that CM2 being applied to that property at 17th and Powell. You didn't want to change that. You wanted to apply that CM2.
Which is
there.
The more intense zone, CE or CM2?
They're both roughly equivalent. CE has a slightly broader allowance for manufacturing, light manufacturing and industrial uses, and slight broader allowance for auto-accommodating uses.
Wouldn't that be a good thing in the Central East Side?
Well, I think CM2 makes sense here, and that's what the property owners actually requested, I believe. If the north side of Powell there is going to redevelop as a pretty intense development around the station area someday, then having more less auto-oriented uses across Powell at that point to me makes sense.
That's a good point.
There's still major industrial sites near there, but those are small parcels, and it's the transition into the Brooklyn neighborhood there. So to me, that made sense as as a scale.
And stuff, Grace.
And just to clarify, I spoke with Eric Weiland, who is the Brooklyn Action Corps chair, and he said we've been wanting this change for years.
The CM2.
So why they did not submit testimony in support? It would, for them, it was they were very favorable to
the CE.
To the CM2.
They,
would like
and
to.
And that's what the amendment is. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm fine with it then. Thank
all
you.
Right. So then let's act on 16 then, unless there's any other discussion about that?
So moved.
Okay, so we're moving 16 as stated and second. So let's vote on that, please.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Zaltzman.
Aye.
Ailes.
Aye. Okay, and then what was 22?
22 is the Sylvan Highlands issue, and there's a couple of them that are here, and we've had many discussions during the process about should they be upzoned from R20 to R2, which is a massive change.
Well, there's several here there's one or more here in the package that's handled individually.
Right, and my understanding, well, my recollection is that we did handle each one individually, but we had some good discussions about not change the zone, that we could do what the property owners said and put the comprehensive plan designation up, but we still need a quasi-judicial zone change process so that the neighbors can weigh in and so that we can require all of the transportation improvements that we need.
Well, so what does 22 in particular cover?
22 covers the properties on Southwest 58, 1434 and 1512.
Yes.
You received testimony from the property owner. They're abutting the frontage in front of them is unimproved without a sidewalk, but they are directly north of where there is a sidewalk, and they testified that it is their intent to build a sidewalk. Staff told you that we are slightly more comfortable with the idea of doing a quasi-judicial change in this situation. They testified that there is evidence that we have succeeded in requiring sidewalks with building permits, and so it's a little bit of a debate about how strong our ability to require sidewalks is and whether we need the quasi-judicial hearing. The property owner asserted that they're comfortable building a sidewalk in any case.
Well, yeah, that's so good, but they still need to, I think, go through the process because the neighbors might not have been paying attention to this. I've been looking, obviously, while we're doing all these changes, I've been extra vigilant at looking at where has people required sidewalks and where have they not. And I think that there isn't the evidence, certainly from my looking out the bus window, that sidewalks are always required where needed.
Well, so I think I have the opposite viewpoint on this. These are R20 today, right?
Yes.
There are R20 with an R2 comprehensive plan designation.
So R20, if we're doing long-range planning, which is what we're doing, R20 doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So I think making someone go through a quasi-judicial process just to assure that we will get a sidewalk is really using, the wrong tool. We should make sure that PBOT's requirements are sufficiently clear and strict that when that kind of development occurs, that sidewalks are required and constructed. I mean, the assurances from the property owner are fine, but we don't have to rely on assurances. We can rely on regulations. So I would assume that we would rather, in many cases, well, we've got connectivity stuff in here, too, elsewhere in the TSP portion of the plan. I would rather us be always in planning, and in this case as well, be very explicit about what we expect and require rather than say, well, it's an open-ended process. It's not. So if we want it to be developed for housing at some density other than 20-acre zoning, then let's say so, but then let's make sure that we get the sidewalks that are the issue, right? There's not another issue here besides the sidewalks, right? It's not should it be R20. It's should there are we guaranteed getting the sidewalk?
Yeah, so, and is it okay now is what that would be saying. If we vote for R2 now, we're saying just go ahead. And the challenge, Mayor, is that you're not going to be in charge of PBOT. I'm not going to be in charge of PBOT. We don't currently have, I think, the same pressure as would be exerted by neighbors at the hearing on a quasi-judicial change.
Well, again, but I guess I'm pretty mystified that we can't require sidewalks in a situation like this. I mean, is there anybody here from PBOT that can help illuminate this for us? Denver, somebody?
Based on, I mean, PBOT, feel free to come up if you have. And I think that it's site-specific sometimes. There is an ability to waive the requirement or accept waivers, especially when it's an isolated site.
Right.
This is not isolated, so maybe it's more likely.
This is the parcel at the end of the sidewalk, right?
Yeah, I think we do have, I think, the tools and code authority. My name is Denver Igarda. I'm a senior transportation planner with the Portland Bureau of Transportation. And we do have the code authority in making those requirements. As Eric described, sometimes it's site-specific based on the conditions. We also have tools such as the new local transportation infrastructure charge to get fee in place of improvements on local streets. But with that, we're able to provide kind of more clarity on where we need the street improvements the most. And so I think PBOT has been a lot firmer in recent years about getting street improvements and frontage improvements.
Yeah, I think you have been too. I mean, put it a little playfully, in these 4 years, I've heard a number of complaints about PBOT being too strict about sidewalks, and frankly, I haven't agreed with those complaints most of the time, but I haven't heard a single complaint from a neighborhood about PBOT should have required a sidewalk and didn't get one. So, if anything, it seems to me you're erring on the side of infrastructure rather than on, we'll get to it later. And that's where we should be.
Mayor, this is a good discussion. Let's test where we are.
Let's test it. So I'm going to move 22 as is, which is the change, right?
Okay. I'll second that.
All right. So let's take a vote on that and see if we've got a majority, and if not, we'll set it over.
Fritz.
Good discussion. Thank you. No.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Hale.
Aye. Okay. So that, those are done.
So now we move to
thanks, Deborah.
Motion package number 4, which is a collection of zoning code amendments that staff has identified because they appear to have support and are not controversial.
I'll move.
Okay.
Second.
Were there a couple of amendments we were going to do on 26, which is the school district notification to add school districts to the neighborhood contact requirement?
Yes. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. I believe we have a friendly amendment to add business associations to 26 and the notification.
Makes sense.
The yes, that's correct. Do you want to consider that separately or just move it with that amendment?
Move that as a friendly amendment. I understand the sponsor has graciously agreed to add it.
And that and the school district notification too, has that been added?
That is the amendment.
That is 26.
So you would be amending number 26 to in addition to listing schools for the neighborhood contact requirement, you're adding business associations.
Do you want to vote on that, or can it be a friendly amendment?
It can be a friendly amendment.
That's fine. And thank
that's
you.
Incorporated.
Thank you, Commissioner Friend.
All right. Any more discussion about that one? Then let's take motion 4 with that understood friendly amendment in addition.
I'm going to, at times, just look through my notes to make sure that there was nothing else I was supposed to do. But I believe this is aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Hale?
Aye. Okay.
Now we're transitioning to some trails, and the first motion is a bundle of trail amendments that we believe we had support for. You may want to have some discussion of this bundle, but we put them together as one vote because they are relatively uncontroversial.
And this bundle does not include the two questions on Hayden Island, which are separately addressed later in
correct.
The list.
The Hayden Island question is part of the street classification map, not the trails map. And then we pulled out for individual vote the Markham Hill and the Saltzman Road trail segments because we believe there was some discussion necessary there.
Yeah, okay.
And one that's,
motion?
Excuse me, I have one more question. I'll have a question on this. It includes the trail near I-405. Can you tell me where near I-405?
Yeah, it's as you approach westbound the Vista Tunnel on the south side of 26 there's a trail that starts, I'm not sure exactly what street it starts on, but it starts there as right before the tunnel and goes east south of 405 and connects kind of past south of PSU.
Okay. I got briefed yesterday by Parks on an issue on a different part about the Green Loop. Is the Green Loop included in any of this?
No, the Green Loop is part of the Central City Plan.
That's going to bring that up. Okay, thank you. Aye.
Oh, sorry.
I think
I think we have a second.
All right. So, now we can vote.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Hoffman.
Aye.
Hale.
Aye. Okay. All right.
So motion six related to trail segment 82 on Markham Hill and the request, this is a modified version of amendment number 46. The request or the modified version is to move the trail segment from crossing a property to follow Southwest Campus Drive. And the reason we suggested the modification was we got testimony from both the Southwest Trails and the neighborhood and the OHSU folks that they all agreed with that change.
I'll move motion six.
Second.
Okay, further discussion? Let's take a vote, please.
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay. Number seven.
Number seven is amendment to remove a trail segment on Saltzman Road west of Skyline. And this is one where staff recommended against the motion. So I don't know. Mr. Cole is here to just provide a little background on that. This is John Cole with my staff, who has been focusing on the trail issues.
Yeah, so refresh our memory about this one, John, why there's a difference of opinion here about this one.
Well, you did receive a number of public testifiers against including this particular segment based on issues, I think, of privacy and of impact on some natural resources in the area. It had been included in the packet initially to match up with a West Side Trail project that had been adopted through a public review process through Metro. During the adoption of that Metro Trail segment through a resolution of the Board of County Commissioners, they did raise some concerns over the specific alignments that occurred under county jurisdiction to the west of the city property. So that was the basis of their testimony against including this particular trail segment. It is entirely within city right-of-way, so we're not on any private property. And staff had taken the position that having this particular trail segment that does match up with a conceptual trail alignment within the Metro-approved trail was an acknowledgement of that particular trail planning process and did indicate that we were interested in providing, if you will, a receiving point of the West Side Trail, regardless of which alignment it eventually settled on under county jurisdiction. So I don't think it's anything that that staff feel strongly about, but we do think that retaining that particular trail segment is a signal in support of the Metro West Side trail planning process.
Isn't the concern of the neighbors that it's entirely private property on the county side, so it takes people down a public right-of-way, but there isn't a connection to anything public on the other side?
It doesn't necessarily, the designation of a trail on the zoning map doesn't necessarily lead to signage or any specific trail that the public would be aware of, and I guess it's staff's assumption that people don't use the zoning map to navigate trails in Portland, but aside from a few of us.
Yes, but that doesn't answer my question. There's private property on this other side, so the county or somebody would have to condemn private property to get people to make the connection.
Or exact it through a development process, correct. And that's been the debate with at the regional level about the routing of the trail to the west of here.
So since it's public right-of-way, I'm not really quite sure why we would put a trail designation on it. If there were to have exactions with the county property, it might even be a street, never mind just a trail.
The primary effect of the trail designation, if it's in public right-of-way, is to give PBOT a signal that this is a potential trail, and so it could affect city requirements for sidewalks on that street. But you're correct that the trail could be built without us having the stars on the zoning map in this segment because it would be connecting to the public right-of-way.
So your inclination is to take it off?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the motion before us. Staff had the contrary recommendation, but
so you're moving.
I have to always agree with the staff, just most of the time.
So Mayor, you're moving the Hales-Fritz Amendment?
Yes.
I'll second that.
Motion 7. All right. Further discussion? Roll call, please.
Fritz.
Another good discussion. Thank you. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hoffman?
Aye.
I want to just say thanks to the staff. We've worked our way through a lot of, we're working our way through a lot of trails issues in this, and you know, ended up in sort of this, at least for me, kind of late in the game turbulence between the Metro process and our own. I think we're getting it right in terms of sorting out where trails are actually practically likely, and we'll return to that conversation. We talk about Hayden Island, as opposed to, you know, ones that are going to get people concerned that aren't going to happen. I don't mind pushing the envelope on trails that have any reasonable prospect, but this one falls on the right side of that line. Aye. Okay, let's move on to number 8.
So we're now shifting gears into code amendments that we want to consider individually. The first motion relates to amendment number 36, and I believe Commissioner Fritz had further revised it in a memo on November 15th. This is amendments to Title III, which established the Citizen Involvement Committee, and the commissioner proposed changes provide more specificity about membership, meetings, and appointments.
Okay, so are you satisfied with where we are on this now?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, so
Commissioner. This says as modified by a November 15th memo. We have that memo?
You should have that memo. If you don't, we can certainly find it somewhere.
Commissioner Fritz, could you just summarize what's the highlights?
Hang on a second, let me see if I can find it again.
Oh, is it in the box? Can I grab it?
I'm not sure if I can lay my hands on this.
I believe we have it in the box somewhere, so we'll
one of those boxes.
It's in one of those.
Since August, Commissioner, just summarize it was cleaning up who's responsible for this committee, what it does, how many is a quorum and that kind of thing.
And I heard the word appointment. So is there, what under your approach, what would be the appointment process?
Sure, I know it's just after 9:30, but at this point I'm still not functioning particularly well because I can't remember where we got to.
Bureau of Planning and Sustainability would be the appointing bureau.
I believe that's correct.
The commissioner of that commissioner agency would be the appointing entity.
Yeah.
And would they come to council?
Yeah.
They typically would. Right?
I think it's, you know, it's actually technically the mayor on the recommendation of the commissioner in charge of the
right,
bureau.
Right. Like you do so like all, like other appointments.
Come to the council for a vote.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was just working to make sure it was congruent with our other committees.
Yeah. Okay. If you're satisfied with that, I am too. So
we also included in that in discussion with commissioner's office, an amendment to include the phrase that it was going to be geographically representative too, and that was testimony received from the neighborhood associations
Representation from a reasonably broad spectrum. Okay, so Commissioner Fritz moves, and I'll second number 8. Further discussion? Okay, let's take a vote, please.
Fritz.
So I apologize to Claire Adamczyk, who's done an amazing job in my office of helping sort through this. I have now found that she's included the memo in my packet. So it consists of, the committee will consist of at least 5, no more than 12, broadly representative, commissioner in charge appoints, renewable for 1 second term, but not after that, and gathering information and other such good things that committees do. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Grossman.
Aye.
Hale.
Aye. Okay, thank you.
Number 9 is amendment number 37, and this was a staff request. I'll try and go over the purpose of it. Metro Title I requires that cities have minimum densities codified in their zoning code, and this has been the case since the 1990s. Commercial mixed-use zones don't currently have minimum residential densities. You can do either commercial or residential, and if you do residential, there's not a minimum. With the new comp plan and the zoning map that we're asking you to adopt now, we've done a number of zone changes that shift properties from residential to commercial, and the net result of all those changes was to reduce the total minimum density of our zoning map as a whole, which may run afoul of the Metro Title I requirement that we maintain and not slide back on our overall total minimum density for residential zoning. And so we're proposing an amendment that would impose residential minimum densities in mixed-use commercial zones when residential development is proposed. So it wouldn't force residential, but it just says if you're going to build residential, you have to meet a minimum density similar to how you would be doing that in residential zones. And we believe that's a sufficient addressing of that issue that would satisfy Metro's concern with their Title I.
Okay.
So does that mean that there has to be housing in the commercial zone?
No. It you could still build 100% commercial and it would not be subject to this. But if you're going to start putting housing units on a site, it would preclude someone from using a prime mixed-use zone for one house. You would have to build more than one unit if you're building new development. If you have existing residential development, you can come closer to conformance without going all the way. But if you're completely redeveloping a site, it would require a minimum density if residential is included.
Okay. I'm moved. Second.
All right. Further discussion? Let's take a vote on number 9 then, please.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Elkman.
Aye.
Hale.
Aye. Okay.
Motion 10 is related to Zoning Code Amendment 30 from the memo dated November 4th. This is the one that we referred to earlier that was requested by Portland Community College to add the allowance for housing in one of the two campus designations, the denser of the two campus designations. There's a second question coming later about whether the Sylvania campus should be zoned that denser designation, but the request, there are two campus zones, one that's more oriented to lower density neighborhoods, and an example of that would be Lewis and Clark, another campus zone is the denser one that's more accommodating for urban campuses like Killingsworth, PCC, or the hospitals, Good Sam, and the proposal, as originally recommended by the Planning Commission, the campus zone allows housing for staff and students and in the case of medical, the patients, but doesn't allow just separate housing. And the request was to be a little bit broader and allow housing outright. And the distinction would be that would allow potentially those campuses to entertain the idea of building potentially affordable housing that wasn't directly affiliated with their campus, which is something that PCC is considering as an option. So
I'll move.
It would also allow them theoretically to develop market rate housing and use that proceeds to subsidize some part of their operation.
Correct.
It doesn't prejudge what kind of housing.
Correct.
But it gives them the flexibility. Okay.
I move number 10.
Second.
Further discussion?
Yes, yeah, so I just have a question. In relation to your comment, Commissioner Fish, is there any concern that any institution, not naming any, would develop housing for profit and then not have enough student accommodation?
I don't have that. That would defer to the board of directors and the political process and the governing process. I just was clarifying that there is no constraint. My guess is, from a public policy point of view, and given the locations of the campuses, there'll be tremendous interest if there is to be other housing for other than faculty and students to make it affordable, because there is a shortage of affordable housing generally for people who are students or full-time minimum wage workers. So
yes, sir.
I have confidence in the political process.
So keep going if you want. I have another question.
Well, I'm just thinking about the building that PSU helped complete, right, which is for sale, and what, you know, they're condos, not dorms, right? And it would be good to know how many of those actually are being either rented or sold to students versus the general public.
Okay, I hear you. I don't know the answer to that question. I have another question, which is, I should know this because we've talked about this before, but it just occurred to me that I don't know this, and that is, I understand the scale and design requirements attendant to the mixed-use zones, but what would prevail here? Is there floor area ratio? Is that,
yeah, the campus.
In other words, obviously, we don't want, you know, Lewis and Clark building a 25-story tower. So,
right. The campus zones have their own floor area ratios. The lower density one has a 0.5 FAR. These tend to be pretty big campuses with,
right,
a lot of trees, so that's enough. The denser one has a 3-to-1, which is similar to the moderate scale mixed use zone. They do include some of the same design standards as the mixed use zones, where it fronts up against commercial streets and other mixed use streets. So the in terms of the transit setbacks and the articulation of the buildings and all that is the same standards have been applied there.
Okay.
I'm one other thought I just want to throw out there. I've been thinking about ways that we could create more incentives for faith communities, campuses, to build housing for older adults. The idea being that we know that older adults like to be adjacent to academic institutions to take advantage of programming. So perfect case would be within the university district. We also know that we have some churches, historic churches in this city that are losing their congregations, and what better place if they were to develop a parking lot or something than to have housing for older adults that then could be part of that community. So that's not before us, but I am personally intrigued by the idea, particularly of housing for older adults and affordable housing on campuses because of the other amenities that campuses offer the residents.
Yeah, I like that too. I mean, one other question that hadn't occurred to me, and Dan, you may know the answer to this already, and that is, assuming, and I certainly am assuming, that we're moving forward with inclusionary housing, would those requirements apply to non-student housing built on a college campus?
Probably, but that's a good question.
To be determined.
So we might want to specify that, right?
Yeah, you might. My understanding, Tom Armstrong, I believe, is in the audience.
Yeah, it's right behind you.
Is that true?
Would inclusionary housing requirements apply to the non-student housing built on a college campus under this provision? Okay, that's as it should be, in my opinion. So, okay, further questions or concerns about this one? All right, then let's take a vote, please, on this one.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Hales?
Yeah, it's a little bit of an experiment. I think it's a good one, though. I like it. Aye. Okay.
So now we're moving into one that we expect a little more debate. This is the Alphabet District. And this one, we've put three alternate motions on the table, A, B, and C. Motion A essentially upholds the Planning Commission recommendation with a slight technical change that is at staff's recommendation. Motion B rejects the Planning Commission recommendation and retains the existing 4-to-1 FAR in the Alphabet District in the RH zone. And then Motion C was an attempt at a compromise from the mayor that retains the Planning Commission recommendations but adds a few more properties to the 4-to-1 area. And bigger background is the Alphabet District is one of our National Historic Districts. The RH zone, which is what this amendment is about, has two potential FARs, either 2-to-1 or 4-to-1, and it's mapped in the zoning code. And the Alphabet District initially was 4-1 and has been for many years. There are sometimes some conflicts between the Landmarks Commission design review process and that floor area, and in the past some buildings at 4-1 have been rejected because of concerns about massing. We got into this business of looking at FAR because you modified some of the boundaries of the RH zone in your zoning map amendments, and so we had to go clean up these maps from just a housekeeping perspective, and when we did that, we got the attention of some of the neighbors who then testified that this should be 2-1, not 4-1. You heard some testimony from affordable housing providers and some property owners concerned about the loss of density in such a close-in urban neighborhood, and then you heard from NWDA and historic preservation advocates that the 2-1 was more appropriate. The Planning Commission's recommendation kind of split split and kept 4-1 on the south side of the district, which is close to the MAX station and where there is a slightly higher preponderance of bigger historic buildings. The maps on the screen, the red line on the map on the screen is where the Planning Commission drew the line, essentially. So the RH zones south of that line retained 4-1, and the areas north of that were reduced to 2-1. Amendment, so that's sort of what would be in play if Motion A passes. If Motion B passes, the line would go away and it would all just stay 4-1. Motion C would add the properties in red on the map to the area that is 4-1 and retain south of the line 4-1.
And then the other, to complicate this a little further, the other notion that was floated but never actually put in the form of a potential amendment was to look at 3-1 instead of either of these or as a compromise.
Correct. That was discussed a little bit. Staff didn't recommend that. It would be introducing kind of a whole new framework into that zoning code, and it was
the listable.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure which of these I like either, but I'm not sure if I like that one. I'm not sure if that made it any better, but it was at least worth talking about.
My understanding that C is the one that you were leaning towards.
Yeah, I think, you know, I still think C is a reasonable compromise, there are detractors to each of these approaches. The detractors to option C is that it's spot zoning. I think it was an attempt on my part and our part to try to make a reasonable call about where the 2-1 really should be applied for purposes of historic preservation and where some higher intensity development potentially could be allowed, although it's still subject to the landmarks process, as we saw in the case that we decided against. So
I wanted to just interject that I believe this is the point where Commissioner Novick wanted to join the conversation.
And, available to do so?
Yes.
Okay. All right. All right. So council member is going to participate by telephone in the meeting. I need to make these announcements that need to be made before we do that. There's the nature of the emergency requiring the member to participate by telephone is that Commissioner Novick is participating by telephone because without his participation, there may not be a sufficient number of council members present to adopt this ordinance as presented. We've made sure that Commissioner Novick is properly informed of the business before us. Do any of the council members who are physically present object to having Commissioner Novick participate
by
telephone?
Mayor, if this was another legislative body in Washington, D.C., I would offer I would reserve my objection pending which way he tends to vote on the matter before us.
Absolutely.
Okay, but no objections for now. So therefore, Commissioner Novick, you're provisionally participating. Welcome.
So I would move motion B.
Can you hear us, Commissioner Novick?
Let's see if Steve is connected here.
I'm here.
Okay, there he is. All right.
Is that Commissioner Salt for moving motion B?
Yes.
And I will second that.
Okay, so this is retaining 4-1 everywhere where it is currently mapped and both not accepting the recommendation from the PSC or my attempt at a compromise, right?
Yes, I'd like to speak against the motion. I you know, in terms in answering the question of is this spot zoning, I think a lot of what we've done in this comprehensive plan is lot by lot zoning. So I'm not at all concerned that we would be providing that. Also, as we found with an appeal to council, it's about truth in zoning. If you can't possibly or very unlikely to be able to meet the historic review standards, we're not really doing people a favour by implying that they can develop at a higher intensity than it actually works out at.
Right. I agree with that viewpoint. Okay, further discussion before we take a vote on option B? Okay, roll call, please.
Fritz.
No.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
No. Okay, but it passes. All right. Let's move on then to option number 12.
So motion 12, like the previous one, is a three options. This concerns drive-through regulations. And we've discussed this at length in some earlier briefings, but I'll just go over the general lay of the land again. We have three options, A, B, and C. Option A retains the Planning Commission recommendation and clarifies, includes some clarifying language from staff. Essentially, it would prohibit drive-through facilities and related quick vehicle servicing uses east of 80th. West of 80th, it would allow new drive-through facilities and quick vehicle servicing uses only in the more auto-accommodating CE zone. West of 80th, it would also allow rebuilding and expansion of existing facilities in the CM1, 2, and 3 zones. Motion B, we tried to keep the same pattern. I believe this was Commissioner Saltzman's amendment, reflects the staff's. It goes back to the staff's August recommendation to Planning Commission before they added the 80th Avenue distinction. So it would allow new drive-throughs and quick vehicle servicing uses in all of the CE zones citywide. It would also allow existing facilities in the CM1, 2, and 3 zones to be expanded or rebuilt. They would continue to be prohibited in the central city and in the new Main Street overlays, which correspond to the core Main Streets of our centers in the comp plan. And those would be treated as non-conforming development. The option C was a potential compromise floated by the mayor. It would continue to prohibit drive-through facilities in all of the mixed-use zones, but not just east of 80th. So it erases the Planning Commission's east of 80th distinction. But unlike the Planning Commission, it would allow quick vehicle servicing uses, new ones in any of the CE zones citywide. So that was drawing a distinction between like a fast food drive-through and a gas station. Excuse me. And then all drive-through facilities in the central city and in the new Main Street overlay, like option B, would be treated as non-conforming. It, like the other option, it would also allow existing facilities to be rebuilt and expanded in the CM1, 2, and 3 and CE without being considered nonconforming. And we had some maps that we had prepared of the sort of net effect of this. Okay. If anyone needs to look at those, they're on the screen. Option A, in these maps, they use the same color scheme where red is showing where they would be, new ones are prohibited. Orange is showing where new ones are prohibited, but existing ones have a more liberal rebuild allowance. And then green is where you can just build new ones or rebuild old ones. So under option A, you can see the green has retreated to the remaining CE zoning west of 80th. Under option B, the green basically corresponds to the CE zone citywide and is both east and west of 80th. And then in option C, there is also there is less green, but more orange, and it depends on the distinction here is whether you're quick vehicle servicing or other uses. So it could be green or red depending on the situation.
So let me speak a little bit about options motion C. Well, let me speak about all these. One, I thought that the Planning Commission's idea of east of 80th was laudable, but not I don't think really workable. I think what we should be trying to do in this planning effort, like all, is just zone for the city we want and be serious about climate. Well, we want the whole city to be less auto-oriented, but we have to acknowledge the reality that people do need to have their vehicles serviced. So that's why the distinction that we're making, particularly in C, but also in B, about quick vehicle servicing is just being practical to me. And then secondly, I don't want to the problem I have, frankly, Dan, with option B is that it really does the opposite to East Portland. It says East Portland is very auto-oriented now, and it's going to stay that way. So I'm concerned about that. So my preference here would be first choice C, second choice B. In my evaluation of these options, I could live with B, but I think C is better.
Eric, could I make a couple of observations? And I, this discussion about drive-throughs brings back some memories, because this is an issue that the mayor has been very passionate about and has shaped the debate and has brought a lot of his own values and his history to this. And I'm reminded when I served with another mayor named Adams, he helped me do something called Bud Clark Commons. And there was an issue a couple of years later he cared a lot about, and I was wavering, and he passed a note down to me. And I opened the note and I said, "This is my Bud Clark Commons." Unfortunately, I still couldn't support it, but that's another matter. Based on the briefings I've had, Mayor, and the analysis, I have a kind of a 1A, 1B on this, and I think we're going to land in a better place, but we'll see how the votes unfold. I just want to make a couple of observations. As my colleagues know, last year, I lived by myself with a much more limited support network because my family was in Europe, and from time to time I got sick. And it was really eye-opening, frankly, to navigate hospitals, doctors, drugstores, and the basic necessities of life. And it really sucked to have, you know, a medical condition and be in a drugstore trying to navigate all the things. And I began to appreciate the convenience for some people of being able to, you know, stay in their car and pick something up. And, you know, we're years and years ago, we had younger children, and there was also a benefit of not having to get out of the car and go through all that. But so there's a convenience factor. I think Commissioner Saltzman has made an important argument about opportunity through some of these businesses that we don't necessarily endorse as a city, but have created opportunities, particularly for minority entrepreneurs. And it is worth noting that our newest member of the state legislature from the region is a successful entrepreneur of color who owns McDonald's franchises, not a place that I go to for my food, but I know for other people in our community is a place they go. There's another concern I have here, and that is I have a 12-year-old now who seems to be spending a lot of time in Washington County and Clackamas County because they have malls, and that is a safe place where kids get sent on the weekends. And so I'm seeing a lot more Clackamas and Washington. And I notice that there's a lot of drive-throughs in those counties. And it would be a perverse outcome of all this if what we ended up doing was encourage people to get in their car and drive to another county to take advantage of something that they can't take advantage closer to their home. And then I will just close by saying, on the question of what kind of economic activity we try to encourage, again, thanks to my daughter and Chuck Amato and others, I have a different view about food and about choices. But as I get older, I'm loath to impose those on others. You know, when I go to the county fair, I don't break out in hives because people are walking around with candy apples and cotton candy and smoking and sometimes have, you know, above what the Surgeon General said is the weight limit for our age. Because people get to make those choices. We hope we can encourage them to do healthier things. And I'm an example of someone who can be taught to try healthier things. But I'm increasingly reluctant to mandate, which is why I love the fact that in parks, for example, when I was a commissioner and continuing under Commissioner Fritz, we offer healthy choices, but they're options. They're not mandates. We don't restrict. We add. So those are the kinds of things I've been struggling with on this. And again, I have a 1A and a 1B, and I hope we can vote first Saltzman, see if where we are on that, And if there isn't a consensus, then take up C, which I'm guessing there will be a bigger consensus, and see where we are in this.
Okay. Could you just show me option C, Matt, please? I'm looking at Barbara going diagonally on the west side and also at Sandy on the right side, because those are places which I would prefer to have fewer dryad flues than there are now, which it looks to me like the Hales Amendment gets us there. Could you go back to B again, please? Maybe it's about the same.
It's about the same. Both are showing the CE zone, but the distinction is in C, the only drive-throughs allowed are the quick vehicle servicing kind.
Right.
But so the green is a different flavor of green, I guess, in C. In terms of the zoning on Barber, that green essentially shows where the CE zoning is. And, Commissioner, there may be further opportunities to affect that map as we learn more about the location of the light rail station areas and probably do some further refinement there.
Yeah, so, to put it sort of in policy terms, the approach that I'm recommending in option C says we want walkable urbanism everywhere we have zoned for mixed use, and drive-throughs would generally not occur there. We want quick vehicle servicing in the CE zone because that's the kind of use that's supposed to happen in the CE zone.
The other distinction, I guess, or element of several of these options is the idea of allowing a more liberal rebuild allowance,
right,
and not considering the existing ones non-conforming. And what that does is it allows the property owner, in theory, to upgrade their facility to the latest, brand design, and which usually means they're going to come closer to meeting our pedestrian standards and our building orientation standards, rather than locking them into the exact footprint they have right now.
Yeah.
If you look, presumably those vertical ones are 82nd and 122nd.
Correct.
And so it seems to me that is zoning for what we want, is allowing it in a few places, but trying to change from the very auto-oriented properties that are there now. And I think that was why East Portland Action Plan was so keen to have slightly less liberal allowances than they have now.
All of these maps have less green than the current zoning map because we've moved some properties out of the CE zone and put them into the CM2, as you were discussing in the earlier Powell amendment.
Yeah, the other comments I would make, again, this has been a really robust debate. We had a lot of testimony about it. The only other comments I would make is I was struck on this discussion, as I have been in a lot of things lately, about a generational divide. The young progressive Portlanders saying, we don't want to live in an auto-oriented city. We don't want required parking. We don't, there's a lot of those issues have been dividing pretty clearly and along generational lines. And then secondly, it's just our commitment to climate action. So when do we start? Well, we should have started 25 years ago, but we're trying to catch up. So that's my pitch.
So I guess I would just say on behalf of my amendment, I believe there's a lot of different currents running through this issue around on drive-throughs, whether it's new urbanism, climate action. But I'm looking at it from a point of view that these are drive-through services are things that our residents want. I see every time I see a line in front of the Dutch Brothers or, a Taco Bell or whatever, people want the convenience of drive-throughs. And I'm loath, I think like Commissioner Fisk said, to sort of impose my set of values here and restrict that option. I think we are restricting it, but I think, we should be more tolerant of them. And as Commissioner Fish alluded to, these, a lot of these businesses are the first rung for minority entrepreneurs to become successful. And I think we should think about that as well. So there's a lot of different values at work here, and those are the values that drive me, is it's something our residents find convenient, particularly those with young children or those with disabilities or older adults. And it does provide an avenue for successful people to be successful as business people. And I think these are values that, to me, make me support my amendment. And I would move my amendment.
Okay, so Dan moves
I'll
motion
second
B.
It.
Any further discussion? Steve, do you want to comment before we vote?
Yes. I'm persuaded by the mayor's argument. I think that option C is correct. I also would note that I think that limiting drive-throughs is a way of honoring Michelle Obama and her healthy food campaign.
True enough. Okay, let's take a vote then on B as moved.
Fritz?
No.
Fish?
I really appreciate this discussion, and I was being lighthearted, but the mayor has made this a signature part of our debate, and I have a much deeper understanding of the competing values here, and I think there may be a couple of right answers today. Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Novick?
No.
Hales?
No.
So I move option C.
Second that. Further discussion? Okay, let's take a vote on option C.